Back when it was originally released, I really, really wanted to get my hands on a new Xbox One X. You know the one. It was 4K ready with a considerably faster processor. So naturally, I tried absolutely everything in my power to get one as immediately as I could. My local Walmart was having one of those Black Friday sales, and like so many others, I stood patiently in line, waiting to try and beat the rush to grab one. But I was nowhere near sprightly or fortunate enough to actually get one that way. So after failing to get one in person, I then tried getting one online. But as rapidly as I wanted one to own, the users who were reselling them were asking way, way too much money, and I simply couldn't afford to shell out double, or sometimes triple the price. After weeks of trying to find a way to get a hold of one, I had to come to the conclusion that it just wasn't to be. It was then that I had something of a stroke of luck. Although I had resorted to Craigslist in my desperation, I did actually find someone that was selling their Xbox One X at no more than the original buying price of the console. Naturally, I was skeptical. For the life of me, I simply couldn't fathom why they would do something like that. But one thought overrode all others. If I didn't put in a bid now, someone else would, and I could kiss my chance of owning a One X goodbye. I immediately emailed the seller and let them know that I was very interested. Not only that, but I had the cash on hand and was ready to go. I also offered to pay for gas or whatever it would take to get the console delivered to my door. I figured that would be a pretty appealing offer to someone who, I guess, was just strapped for cash around the holidays. I was stunned to get an almost instantaneous response, stating that they did still have the Xbox and were in fact still waiting for a proper bid from a serious buyer. They politely asked for a delivery address so they could bring it over as soon as possible. I was sort of hesitant to divulge such personal information and asked if it would be a better idea to first meet in public since it was much safer that way. I'll be honest, I wasn't too pleased with the idea of a total stranger coming over to my house, but he informed me that he was going to be very busy running holiday errands all day and that there would only be some pretty specific windows of opportunity to drop it off. It would be much more convenient for him if he was about to come over to my house. I was still not particularly ecstatic about the idea, but, oh man, I really, really wanted that new 4K Xbox. So in the end, I agreed and texted the dude my home address. I figured it was safer than me going over to his place. At least this way I'd be on home turf. I was so happy and eager to get my hands on that new console, and that excitement only grew as I began waiting for the guy to turn up. But he took his sweet time. I mean, hours and hours passed by before I began to suspect that he wasn't going to actually show. Around 1 in the afternoon, 4 hours after he was due, I was seriously losing my cool, thinking it was a prank or something. I tried texting the guy back, asking him where he was. Previously, I had gotten pretty timely responses from the guy, but this time I didn't hear a single thing from him. By 6 that evening, I just lost all hope. I assumed that he got a better offer from someone else and didn't have the heart to tell me he picked a new buyer. I was disappointed, more than words can possibly describe. I got myself so psyched and I can't even tell you how deflated I was. It's one thing not to have gotten the item from the store. I could come to terms with that. But I was so close to having one in my hands, it sucked having my hopes dashed so cruelly like that. And that didn't mean I'd given up entirely. So for the rest of the night, I kept looking around on Craigslist and other sites to find a new Xbox One X that was within my price range. But as I was getting ready to wind down for bed, I heard something. At first, I had dismissed it as the wind or something, that it was maybe just my imagination. But then I heard it again. Someone knocking. Not at my front door, but lightly on the TV room window. I walked up to the bedroom window and peer out into the driveway, seeing this strange-looking dude at my front door looking around as if checking the coast is clear. I'm suspicious, but I go downstairs to see what he wants. He identified himself as the guy who had the Xbox, apologized for being so late, and explained he had gotten backtracked with errands during his day. Then, he casually asked if I still had the money. I opened the door all the way, but still kept the screen door closed as a precaution. Something just didn't feel right, like at all. I told him that, yeah, I still had the cash on me, but I didn't see that he had anything with him, so I calmly asked if he had brought the Xbox with him, like if it's still in his car or anything. As expected, he told me it was out in his van. He told me to get the money and come out to the van with him and he would get it for me. I let him know that I wasn't really comfortable walking out to his van, but he seems to understand and tells me it was all good. I briefly look over the guy's shoulder and see that there is in fact someone else sitting there in the van. Not only that, but the dude at my door has been keeping his hands concealed in the little front pouch of his hoodie the whole time while talking to me, and there was definitely something more than just his hands in there. Don't ask me how I could tell. I just could. You know when you just get a gut feeling about something? Yeah, that. I tried to stay as chill as possible as I lied to him that I'd just go fetch my wallet and return in a minute. His mood immediately changed as I closed the door in his face before locking it. I then make the split-second decision, better to be safe than sorry, so I pull my phone out of my shorts and dial 911. But as I do, I heard a loud thud on my front door, then the sound of the van's engine revving before it zooms off into the night. When I went to check and see if he had damaged my door, I nearly peed my pants when I saw a rusty old hatchet buried in the wood. I was right that he had something in his sweatshirt, and that I shouldn't go out to the van with him. Be careful who you're buying from, folks. You never know who's behind the username. About 10 years ago, I graduated college, was unable to find immediate work, and got pretty desperate around Christmas time. So I took on the iconic role of Santa Claus at my local mall. But since Christmas is probably my favorite holiday, I never had a problem getting into character. And well, thanks to my love of pizza and beer, I've never had a problem looking the part either. All it took was the addition of one of those glossy fake white beards and the iconic red suit itself, and I was making myself feel festive just by looking in the mirror. I had the voice down, the suit, the beard, and if I'm being honest, I was pretty proud of how good a Santa I was. Outside of the holiday season, I now work as an admin assistant for a shipping company. Not exactly the most exciting job in the world, but it pays all right. So when the annual opportunity to don the red suit and make some kids smile comes around, I jump at the chance. However, during my time on the job, the most valuable lesson I learned was that you can never, ever promise the kids anything. There will be some children that ask for unrealistic gifts for Christmas. Some are just impossible to procure, like, I want a dragon, a horse, a tank. But sometimes they'll ask for other things that are a little more sensible, just way out of their parents' holiday budget. So I'd learned to give them my best, Santa will try his very best for you, before moving the topic of conversation onto something else. Christmas last year was pretty rough though, mainly because I had made the decision to make it the final one I'd play Santa. But it was rough for other reasons too. I'd developed quite the working relationship with some of the mall employees, both short and long term, so it was quite emotional when I announced that I'd be hanging up the Santa hat to spend more time with my family around the holidays. Anyway, Friday, December 22nd, was my last shift before the switchover to the new guy playing Santa Claus, and the mall was way, way busier than expected. I mean, it always gets pretty hectic the closer you get to Christmas, but even I've never seen anything like it in all the years I've been playing the role. This final day of festivities was easily the toughest one to date, as I knew after that day, I'd be moving on from playing Santa Claus. I know this seems kind of suspect. Most people feel liberated when they leave a job like that. But at the risk of sounding sort of sappy, I didn't have many good Christmases growing up, so I felt like a lot of the festive spirit was me making up for lost time. They say that time flies when you're having fun. Never was a truer word said. That last day flew by quicker than I could have ever expected. One minute it was lunchtime, the next the sun had set and it was fast approaching the time when I'd have to wrap everything up. But just as I was beginning to leave, I noticed a little girl slowly approaching me.
"Why, hello there, little one. And where are your parents?"
I kept the voice on, giving her my warmest Santa smile. She didn't say a word. She just gave me this tired look and kept walking toward me with her arms held aloft, as if she wanted to be picked up. I looked around for her parents, but I didn't see anyone that was obviously accompanying her. So I picked the little girl up and plopped her down on my lap, just as I'd done 1,000 times before.
"And what might your name be, young lady?"
My name is Holly.
Holly? Well, I never. What an adorable festive name. The Holly and the Ivy is one of my favorite Christmas songs. And may I ask, what is your last name, Holly?
Donicky. It's Donicky.
I nodded to the nearby mall security to have the name Holly Donicky broadcast over the mall's speaker system. That way her parents would come and find her. No doubt they'd be extremely worried at this point. But all the while this was happening, I would keep her company.
And what is it that Santa can get you for Christmas, Holly?
Again, she didn't answer. She looked off into the distance as if she were staring at nothing, like the thousand-yard stare you hear about NAM vets having. She then looked up at me with the saddest set of blue-green eyes I'd ever seen.
All I want for Christmas is a friend.
I was dumbstruck. In all my years of playing Santa Claus, I'd never had any kids say they wanted a friend for Christmas. It was absolutely heart-wrenching. All I could think to do was pat her on the head.
Well, I can be your friend, Holly. Santa Claus will always be your friend. And I'm sure a little girl as lovely as you will have no trouble finding herself a friend.
She gave me a weak smile, hugged me, and then hopped down off my lap. I tried to stop her from just running off, but I was hesitant to actually grab her by the arm, lest I upset her. I called her name a few times, but she didn't seem to listen. She just disappeared into the throngs of festive shoppers. I tried to follow, but there was no sign of her. So I started asking around if anyone had seen a little girl, about 4 feet tall, long brown hair, those almost luminous blue-green eyes, kind of a shabby appearance. Not a single person had any idea what I was talking about. It took a fair few minutes for members of the mall's security staff to actually wade through the sea of people and make it to the Santa's grotto. When I told them that she ran off into the department store, they started to become worried.
Have any parents showed up looking for her?
I asked.
Nah, no one. Maybe she just wandered here after getting out of the house or something. Parents don't even know to look here.
I was getting increasingly anxious as time went on, but after a thorough search of the mall and some intense studying of the CCTV camera, there were no signs of little Holly. It was like she just dropped off the face of the earth. I suppose that should have been the last of it, but for some reason, I couldn't keep this little girl off my mind. The way she acted when questioned about her parents, compared to how forthcoming she was with all the other stuff I'd asked her, left a really bad taste in my mouth. So, one morning, after a dog walk and a little breakfast, I sat down at my computer and plugged the little girl's name into Google. I don't quite know what I was expecting to find. Nothing, if I'm being honest, but what I did find absolutely horrified me. December 23rd. Desperate mother pleads for return of missing girl. 9-year-old Holly Grace Donicky was reported missing by her mother, Lily Rose Donicky. At the time of her disappearance, the little girl was wearing a blue and white dress, white tights, and said her hair was in bunches. She is approximately 4 feet 2 inches tall, weighing at 60 pounds, and has brown hair and blue-green eyes. If you have any information regarding the whereabouts of any missing person, please contact the Suffolk County Police Department at 617-635-1100. I was stunned. I just saw her a few weeks before on the 22nd. Perhaps it was a typo, but the more I researched, the more uneasy I became. The next article sent shivers down my spine. January 4th. Breaking. The remains of the missing 9-year-old girl, Holly Donicky, were found today, January 4th, in a wooded area about 3 miles away from her home. Suffolk County Police are investigating the cause of death, which appears to be an act of foul play. Holly was gone. She died just a few weeks after I met her. And all she ever wanted was a friend. I worked in a toy shop for a couple of years, and as you can imagine, Christmas was a pretty intense time for all of us who worked the holiday shifts. It was impossible to get that job without being an intensely enthusiastic, happy, smiley kind of person. Like 80% of the staff were entertainers, or had come from some kind of performance background, and we were living the dream, so to speak. We were actually getting paid to play with toys, joke with kids, and above all, Christmas was the best time of the year for that. A toy shop at Christmas time has such a magical feeling about it, especially if all the staff have the Christmas spirit about them. Now, our store was hugely into Christmas, to the point where our smart casual uniforms even had assistants to Santa Claus or Santa's little helpers or other various things written in big writing over the back. This, of course, led to some fantastic interactions with kids, asking about if we'd met him and things like that. Being the only staff member who had actually worked with children for years, these questions were normally sent my way to be answered because I always had one ready. So, that's the backstory out of the way. One weekday, at an oddly quiet moment, I was on my own on the shop floor while the other staff members restocked after the afternoon rush. A boy comes in unaccompanied, must have been about 9 or 10, smiles briefly at me, and starts walking around. I gave him a couple of minutes to take a look at things before asking him if he wants to play with the new air-powered rocket launcher we had. "No thanks. I know Santa. I don't need your help," he replies flatly. This was mildly unusual, but hey, he was a pretty sweet kid otherwise. Unfortunately, I don't know much in there that would have been good for a kid his age. I figured it'll probably be his dad or someone paying for it, so I start showing him some of the limited stuff that would be suitable for some of the older kids. I show him a few things, and he sees something he likes, this big massage slipper. It's one big slipper that you put both feet into, and it has various massage settings. Not the kind of thing I'd imagine him to pick out, but a fairly cool gift nonetheless. So he asks how much it is, and I tell him it's like $20 or whatever the price was. He then instantly looks angry and frustrated. "Is that a bit too expensive, bud?" I ask, keeping the tone friendly. I don't want this kid to be upset, and he nods. So I show him some other things, and he starts getting more and more difficult to deal with. He's frowning, breathing all heavy through his nose, like he's building up to some kind of temper tantrum. He starts telling me again how he knows Santa, how Santa gives toys away to good kids and doesn't ask for money in return. I just calmly explain that I can't just give stuff away for free, then politely leave him to it to browse the rest of the toys. A couple of more minutes go by. I'm just sitting by the cash register, reading a book since the store is so quiet. It's only me and the kid with my manager up in the office. I remember looking up from my book, and the kid is at the register, just staring up at me with this angry look on his face. Once again, I apologize and explain to the kid that, as much as I'd like to, I can't just give stock away, otherwise I'll get fired. "Your boss is mean," the kid says, seething with anger at this point. Now, this probably wasn't the best thing to do, but since the kid was so on the money with this little statement, my boss was indeed a jerk, I just laugh. Like, not hysterically, just like this little involuntary giggle. The kid does not take this well. He thinks I'm laughing at him.
"Why are you laughing at me?"
he asks, practically shaking with rage. I begin to explain that I'm not actually laughing at him, but I soon realize it's not getting through to him. He just storms out of the store, disappearing among the crowds of middle-aged women that are clogging up the mall. As the afternoon draws on, the store gets a little busier and I get to actually do some work. Like I said, the work was fun, so it was never a problem. Being busy meant the hours go quicker, which means I get to go home quicker. Win-win. So I make a few sales, get to test out some of the fancy new Nerf guns we had in the store, and the weird kid eventually just slips from my mind. Nothing remotely eventful happens for the rest of the day. Right up until closing time when I'm starting my stock take and working on closing down the store. Someone is standing at the register. I look up from my worksheet and it's the kid. I give him a cheery enough greeting, hoping the kid's mood is improved, but it hasn't. Instead, it's gotten worse.
"You're mean too,"
he hisses.
"Look, I'm sorry, kid, but where are your parents?"
I ask, but the kid refuses to answer. He just glares at me again.
"Kid, where are your parents? I don't want to have to call mall security, but you can't be wandering around on your own, okay?"
"He knows when you are sleeping,"
the kid mutters. I roll my eyes, but the way he says it has me really creeped out.
"He knows when you're awake. He knows when you've been bad or good, and you've been really, really bad."
Where's your pop, kid?"
I ask again, trying to remain calm.
"North Pole."
"Yeah, very funny, but seriously, you gotta go. The store is closing."
"He's gonna climb down your chimney, covered in soot, all while you're asleep,"
the kid said. I didn't say a word in reply.
"He'll know when you're asleep, and he'll be able to creep up right next to your bed."
I reach for the store's phone, dialing the mall security short number. I try not to listen to the kid, but I can't help but hear his words over the phone's dial tone.
"He's gonna stuff your mouth with coal until you choke and die."
I turn, ready to scream at this creepy little brat. It's one thing to be a spoiled kid. It's another to say such threatening things to someone who's only trying to help. But when I turn around, the kid was gone. Not a sign of him, even outside the store in the emptying mall. I've only told this story a handful of times, but it never fails to creep me out. The idea of such a kid having such a skewed idea of Santa as some weird avenging angel, having a warped view of the holiday season, never, ever fails to make my skin crawl. Former funeral director here. A bit of a setup first. The cemetery I run is real old, like by a good few hundred years. At least it must be, since the church next to it was constructed during the 17th century. Considering the fact that it is a pretty rural place as well, most people back in the day were buried with only wooden crosses and such. No stone or marble. So as time goes on, crosses rot and wither away, new people get buried, etc. Nowadays, due to less people living out here in the sticks, which means our budget is increasingly limited, the cemetery is really run down and overgrown. It is a really pretty place, and it's honestly pretty depressing. So as some of you can imagine, when you keep burying bodies in the same small patch of dirt for that many centuries, eventually the soil has been worked over dozens and dozens of times. So in the end, it consists of mainly bone meal. You can't even rake over the flower beds there without accidentally uncovering some teeth or finger bones or something equally grim. It's nothing but fragmented skeletons all the way down under the thin turf. The soil sort of resembles the kind of dirt you see near sandy beaches, except on closer examination, all the light-colored parts are just bone fragments rather than crushed seashells. Not really scary or unexpected, just super eerie until you eventually get used to it. You learn to treat anything recognizable as human remains with respect and just tuck it away out of sight under the plant or whatever else you were putting there. Anyway, so someone was taking care of their relative's grave and decided to expand the area around the grave. For some reason, the people around here are not particularly fond of grass, rather preferring a well-leveled ground with Zen garden lines made with a rake. The person removed the grass and was sprucing up the place with a rake when they pulled up a bunch of snow-white hair from the dirt. They must have just freaked out and ran out of there, leaving the cemetery attendant to stumble across what was essentially hair coming out of the ground. She reported it to the church, and supposedly they reburied the remains. Even with all my years as an undertaker, I'm not entirely sure how there could have been a body so close to the surface. But there's another incident that sticks with me even more than that one. My business partner and I had just gotten back to the funeral home from a call for a 27-year-old woman who tragically passed away due to terminal cancer. As we were moving her body from the cot to an embalming table, we heard an audible click, and the radio across the room turned on full volume of static. It's one of those old radios you turn the volume dial until it clicks to turn it on. We both looked at each other, pale as ghosts. He happened to be extremely religious, and this event visibly shook him. He found an excuse to leave early, not long after the incident. So I shut the radio off as I typically use my iPhone to listen to music while doing embalming work. When I'd finished the procedure and was attempting to move her from the embalming table to a dressing table, I heard that click from the old radio and it turned on full volume yet again. At this point, I was fairly freaked out and got out of there not long after. My partner and I never spoke of it again, and nothing like that had ever occurred to my knowledge before or after.